This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
It's self-evidently the case that certain things are not true, and yet people are embracing those ideas anyway, and it's just pure evil. You know, the effort, I think if you hate children and want them to suffer, you'll affirm them when they're wrong about who and what they are. You'll cultivate confusion in their minds and then affirm them when they've completely lost their sense of who they are. That's what you'll do if you hate them and want them to suffer. That's what you'd do if you were a demon trying to have the most diabolical impact on this world that you possibly could have. And look what we have going on in our culture. That's what you'd do if you were a demon.
The history of our Earth is so different from what we can imagine.
Enjoy the journey. The Smithsonian, and if they found out about a large skeleton somewhere, was to go get it.
I'm going to assume at least one person is right, because if one person's right, it busts the paradigm.
It all goes back to the fallen cherub. And the problem with the modern day church, they have a very truncated view of the supernatural.
This backdrop that's just pregnant with all kinds of meaning associated with this Mount Hermon event.
Welcome to Blurry Creatures.
And this guy defects from the kingdom. That's a big deal.
All right, Luke, we started with memes, and who knew? Who knew what Blurry Creatures become? I think sometimes we try to have fun conversations, and we don't take ourselves too serious, and we try to make, you know, use the 80s theme. We use a lot of satire to kind of, you know, whether it's about Bigfoot, aliens, UFOs, and stuff, to kind of bring people into this community. And, like, I think we have created sort of an interesting thing. A lot of people try to have paranormal channels, but one thing we've seen is through the use of satire is that people kind of come around and embrace the community here at Blurry Creatures. And I think we've created a welcoming environment. And we're going to have the kings of satire, or the king of satire, on the show today.
Seth Dillon. Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's something very interesting about humor. You know, I think we talk about this often. Like, you and I, you know, we love to laugh. And we talk about the dark things on our show.
Exactly.
They're tough things to really sit in on, right? And so it's great to have a little levity. And you know, today we get to talk with Seth Dillon, CEO of the Babylon Bee, which,
yeah,
if you don't know what that is, I don't know if you've been online in the 2020s. These folks are make a joke about the great meme wars of the 2020s.
Yeah, well, it's satire. It's not memes.
Yes. They're the kings of satire, right? Like, they're bigger than the Onion. This is, and partly because,
I know,
from a biblical and Christian worldview, and poking fun at the powers that be and our culture and really speaking truth through humor, the Babylon Bee got locked out and put in Twitter jail and canceled in 2022.
Yeah.
And
it just made them bigger.
Dude, it just really lit a fire in what they're doing. And so,
yeah,
super cool, because this is a fun one. It's not so much in our space, but because, yeah, we love the humor and the satire, we kind of wrap that around the supernatural and the paranormal, yeah, things we do. We kind of get to go, and today, not even kind of, today we're going to talk to a guy that does that really in the geopolitical space,
yeah,
and in the cultural space, on social media. So
yeah, that's one thing we do here a lot is try to have different conversations. And a lot of people are having, you know, the same Nephilim conversation a million times. It's good to get kind of out of those spaces every once in a while and have, like, a broader discussion with somebody who's sort of on the front lines, like you said, curating content, news, and satire all at the same time. And I think sometimes it's funny, they kind of run two channels. They run the satire site, and then they run the actual news. And it's such a weird time that individuals now are bringing you more truth than entire systems. Entire media networks are just this totally polished piece of disinformation, and everyone's kind of waking up to it. So it's funny.
I'm gonna say, in the last 4 years too, right? We've seen this crazy acceleration, I think, in the depravity and the craziness of our culture. So much so that,
yeah,
that things like the Babylon Bee in taking things a step farther satirically are actually predicting they're predicting the future unintentionally.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the weird things you see on The Simpsons. And,
exactly.
And what a time to be alive. I think some of the comedy in comedians are really our last bastion of free speech, whether it be the Babylon Bee or comedians that are out there doing it.
That kind of brings me to another thing I wanted to talk about. We have kind of been a long time, you know, thinking about free speech and how to protect our show and how to make our show grow and, you know, where we want to go with Blurry Creatures. And we teamed up with Tread Lively, who, in their name, Tread Lively, is trying to kind of create this cancel culture free community of Christians who are willing to kind of speak out about these subjects and not be canceled. And so you probably heard some ads on the podcast. That's a new thing here. We've said no to that for a long time, but we felt like we finally found a group of Christians and the Duck Dynasty guys to team up with them and what they're doing over there to help support this podcast and keep it growing and fund it, spend more time doing what we do here at Blurry Creatures. So I think they have the same philosophy is what I'm saying. And I think it's cool to be a part of that. And I think with this podcast, I think you and I have always felt like there's something bigger going on here than just a paranormal show or just two guys who want a podcast. I think you and I have found ourselves in sort of the front of this weird spear that we never intended to. I don't think we ever thought anyone would care, honestly. Like maybe our moms and a couple friends would listen to this podcast. So it's really cool to team up with those guys who are, I think, trying to build sort of a cancel-free arm of media, and we're happy to be a part of that. So
yeah, we are. And I would say that in a time where the truth is harder and harder to find, our goal and our mission statement, if you will, here has always been to get better answers, to look for better answers, and look for the truth through a biblical worldview, and that make that our lens. You know, in a time when lies are rampant and deception is rampant, you know, you and I are just we're sitting here in some ways just unintentionally got put in a position where we're doing our best to look for the truth and provide and bring people on the show, because we just interview people that have done the research and are also seeking the truth. And so it'll be a fun conversation today with Seth Dillon, talking about, because he's a completely different path than we are, but in the same way he's looking for and pointing to truth in culture. I think our heart is to do the same thing. In our space is to find the truth in the weird, and the way to do that, of course, is to find it in the things of the Bible.
Yeah, if you want to have an ad-free experience on the podcast and you like what we do here, but you can always become a member of the show. And members get ad-free, and they get first shot tickets to events, spaces behind the blurry in the blurry verse where members can connect. And there's lots of cool reasons to support this show. So if that's new to you and you don't want that, you can sign up. Much as a cup of coffee gets you the same old Blurry Creatures episodes that you're used to. So appreciate you out there. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Thank you guys for rallying around Dr. Jed Burton. The fundraiser is just blown up in the last 24 hours. When this comes out, you guys have smashed through. Just donations keep coming in. So thank you guys for supporting Dr. Jed. And like we said, the community here is important. So let's get Seth Dillon on this one. Thank you. All right. Welcome, Seth Dillon from the Babylon Bee here on Blurry Creatures. I don't know if you know much about our podcast, but we are sort of like the paranormal meets a biblical worldview, or both Christians. And we've had kind of a wild 4 years of our podcast. We talk about everything from Bigfoot to UFOs and all the weird, strange paranormal stuff that happens in the Bible. One thing, you know, Luke and I have ventured in when doing this podcast is kind of seeing how, you know, we had people like Dr. Michael Heiser on the show before he passed away. I don't know if you've read any of his stuff. But he wrote a book called The Unseen Realm, and there's this whole spiritual side to Christianity that people don't want to talk about. And on our podcast, we get into it, whether that's, you know, everything from demons all the way to what are these gray aliens that people are seeing, right?
Yeah.
And how does that affect culture? And obviously, you get a 5,000-foot view from curating the news and making memes. And we actually make a lot of memes on our channel as well, but we have fun with that. But
You'll offend my writers. Don't call them memes. It's satire.
We make memes, but...
Yeah, you guys do the satire.
There's a lot more of the thought that goes into it. But I'd love to have a conversation about the supernatural and your thoughts on it and how it affects geopolitics and the overarching... Because that's a discussion we have a lot. Is just that people think it's just human on human, but the more we get into our show, there's so many... There's entities. It's a spiritual fight. And I think sometimes it's easy just to think that, oh, they're political problems and mm-hmm. things are going on in the world and we don't want to have this spiritual discussion. And a lot of Christians don't, at least, and they don't really have a framework.
I certainly think it goes much deeper than just the politics. So,
oh yeah. So that's what I would love to talk about today. But we kick off every episode on our podcast. What are your thoughts on Bigfoot? Do you have any thoughts on the big guy? And then we can go into it.
I mean, wouldn't we have actually found Bigfoot by now? Bigfoot really exists. It shouldn't be that hard to go to these locations where Bigfoot has been sighted and actually find, you know, real hard evidence of his existence. Yeah, I don't know much about Bigfoot. I don't know what species he's purported to be, if there's a category for that. I don't know. I've just seen the conspiracy stuff that you see floating around online, and it's never really captured my interest.
Yeah, well, we talked about that in the beginning of our podcast, and then we started getting into like sort of stories of the ancient giants, and there's this whole giant narrative that goes throughout the Old Testament, and so our show took a hard turn into that, and so we talk a lot about the weird stuff in the Old Testament, like, okay.
But where do you guys stand on Bigfoot?
Oh, yeah. I mean, at this point, after 4 years of the stories, I mean, we've had everyone come on the show from I shot the thing to... It rolled into my grandma's backyard, and she tells this great story. I mean, I can't tell you, Seth, how many people come on our show to talk about something else and they have a Bigfoot story? Almost almost half. Authors, doctors, everyone has a Bigfoot story. And at this point, I definitely believe he's real. I mean, we brought on everyone you can think of to talk about this creature.
All the scientists, all the academics. Yeah. There's our academics out there like Dr. Jeff Meldrum that collect, you know, up to 10,000 footprints and casts and all the above. So
something's going on.
Something's going on, and it's but physical.
Is it purported to be? I don't even know what the theories are. Is it purported to be something as intelligent as people, or is it like an ape, more so, or is it just like an animal, like a bear?
Probably not like a bear. You probably pulled out of the woods if it was a bear. Yeah.
I think there are some that are more in that category, but there is so many paranormal stories associated with Bigfoot. Everything from lights to orbs to UFOs. I mean, it gets really weird, and Bigfoot disappears. Time slippage, hunters that are terrified have been in the woods for 40 years and then they see this thing and it does things they never described. I mean, the stories are wild, and after a while you're like, if one of these is true, we've got to make room for it. And that's kind of where we started our podcast, and it's exploded into all these weird areas. And obviously the UFO phenomenon is coming out now. The government's talking about, you have whistleblowers. So all of it's welcome on Blurry Creatures. Whatever you want to talk about that's blurry and weird, that's what we love really to talk about.
I will say this, you know, the conspiracy theorists are racking up a lot of wins lately. So,
yeah,
you know, more often than not, it seems like they're right about things, at least, especially when it comes to government and politics and things of that nature. But
I would say, Seth, so is the bee, though. I was looking at the site today because I think it's so interesting. Number one, the sort of the rise of the Babylon Bee and the footprint that you all have now, but the idea that like you guys, that satire has
no
become
pun
reality
with the Bigfoot stuff.
Yeah. Right, here we are. Well, hey, come on, man. Yeah, but I mean, the idea that satire has become reality, it's almost like The Simpsons predicting things, you know, 10 years before. Like, you guys have what's on your website, what's called a Book of Prophecy, and mm-hmm. and 89 to date is what I looked today, 89 of
Well, there's more than that. It probably hasn't been updated in a while. I think we have in our spreadsheet, the latest spreadsheet, I think it's like 104, something like that.
104. So you're not quite at the Bible level, right? But no. You're at 104 prophecies that have come true. Now, what is that experience like? It's got to be somewhat surreal because you guys in your team, you poke fun at everyone, right? Like, I mean, especially the government and government officials, which got you into trouble in 2022. But you poke fun at sort of prognosticating sort of at reality to the extreme, and then it comes to pass. And what is it like sitting on the other side of it?
Well, it's weird because it's not deliberately predictive. You know, we call them prophecies. It's tongue-in-cheek thing. It's not predictive in nature. What it is it's an attempt to... You know, when you're doing satire, like one of the methods that you use is exaggeration. So you're using like hyperbolic language and exaggerating it's like a caricature. When you draw a caricature of someone's face, you know, you exaggerate their features and it's comical. And when satirists look at what's going on in the world and they say, you know, what would be a a funny exaggeration of this to kind of draw out the absurdity of it. They're just going a step beyond the truth in the direction the truth is already pointing. That's all they're really doing. And then what ends up happening, you know, if you're living in an absurd age, which we are, I think, you know, it was Chesterton who said back in 1911 that the world has become too absurd to be satirized, which it's funny that he said that long ago, because imagine what he would say if you were alive today.
Right.
But when you're living in an absurd age, and I think we are, I mean, we're living in an age where they're telling you that men can get pregnant and they're stuffing tampons right in the men's restroom. And there are literally people who are telling you that math is racist. Mowing your lawn is everything is racist. You know, 2 and 2 doesn't equal 4. It can actually equal 5.
Right.
These things are like, they used to be jokes.
Yeah.
And now it's taken seriously. And so when you get to a level in your culture and your society where what used to be comedy is now taken seriously, comedy will come true. It's just inevitable. And so it's funny, and it's at the same time kind of disconcerting.
I think the same way it goes for our shows, like in our episodes, is that these ideas like gray aliens, it's a Hollywood, it's a joke, it's not real, Bigfoot, it's a joke. And then more and more as time goes on, especially in the age of the internet and cell phones, people are like reporting some crazy stuff. And I think our show has gained some steam and kind of launched into a space that we never intended it to, because so many people have a paranormal experience. So many people have something they can't explain happen to them. And so this has been jokes and, oh yeah, grandpa saw Bigfoot, whatever. He's kind of crazy. Drinks a little too much whiskey, you know?
Yeah.
But do you have any paranormal experiences? What are your thoughts on the supernatural? And maybe tell us a little bit about how you feel about those subjects.
Well, I'm definitely a supernaturalist in the sense that I reject a naturalist worldview that says the physical world, you know, physics and chemistry is all that exists.
Yeah.
Matter and energy, physics and chemistry. I'm a supernaturalist, broadly speaking, and then when you narrow it down, theist, and then more narrow than that, Christian theist. So yeah. I'm a Christian who believes that there is a God who created the world, and what comes along with that worldview is obviously that there's more to life than what you see on the surface and what you actually experience in the physical realm. There's also a spiritual realm, and I think that we do have firsthand experience of that as rational agents, as persons who have moral intuitions and we're able to reason and conscious our own experience as embodied persons, I think is evidence of the fact that the world is not just material. There is mind. Mind is a real thing, and I don't think it's reducible to matter. So a supernaturalist, certainly in that sense, in the metaphysical sense, yes. And then when it comes to, you know, the specifics of things like, do aliens exist? Are healings possible and all those things? You know, those are all conversations that you can have, but we can go down any path you want to there. But broadly speaking, yes, supernaturalist.
Yeah, I mean, personal experience, I think, seems to be the best conversations we have on our show is like people who have something they can't explain. And like we were saying earlier, like someone will come on trying to explain something else. They wrote a book about this other story, but they had this experience that just haunts them sort of in a way that good or bad, you know, where they can't quite place it anywhere. And they don't want to talk about it. People don't want to talk about these subjects, but they do want to talk about it on our show. And I think we've created an environment where people feel comfortable.
Well, I've never had a paranormal activity situation where I felt like there was a ghost in the room with me or, you know, someone from the afterlife trying to communicate with me or something. I've never had any experiences like that. Yeah. I have had experiences in my life, and I have to think about, you know, specifically what some of them are, where it seemed like, you know, God was working through that situation, like the way things worked out just made sense. And so I see the hand of divine providence in things and how they work out sometimes. But I don't think I have a single story. I haven't had a near death experience where I, you know, saw a bright light and looked into heaven or some old ghost in a haunted house or something like that. I've never had an experience like that personally. Not once.
You know, kind of that stuff aside, I think, you know, as Christians and sort of in our different paths, like I think one of the things we're looking for is better answers than truth. And I'm just curious from your standpoint, like how does it feel to in a lot of ways be sort of on the front line of a fight on, you know, in the spaces you're in for the truth, right? Because it's comedy's fascinating. I went to see Dave Chappelle last year. And I think Chappelle's interesting in the sense that he's in a place where he's not really cancelable. And he's said a number of times that like the comedians are supposed to be, the jester is supposed to be able to one that speaks the truth to the king, right? Comedy should have carte blanche. Like you shouldn't, but you and the Babylon Bee especially have found yourself in this situation where powers that be, especially in whether it be social media, government, government officials, have decided that comedy, in the sense that in the satire that you created, is a bridge too far.
Yeah,
yeah.
What's it like using satire to really honestly push the truth? Right. If you said you're a Christian theist, and we would say the same, then there really is a truth. There's a truth. It's not Oprah. It's not tell us your truth. There is no your truth. There's absolutes. And
well, it's funny, you know, people will say that relativistic stuff, you know, like your truth is valid and whatever, but you realize that these people that say things like that, they still do believe in objective moral values, because they will point out all kinds of things about your behavior and your beliefs that they think are morally despicable.
Well, of course they do.
And so, you know, they will hold you to a standard, and they will say, oh, well, bigotry is wrong. They'll say that, and they'll say it across the board. It's always wrong, you know? And they're right about all these things. I think bigotry is wrong. Rape is wrong. You know, murder is wrong. They'll have all these things that they will say are, in fact, wrong, and they're not relativists on those things. And so I don't think that anybody can really consistently live out that relativistic worldview. I think you have to, at some point, plant your feet somewhere. You can't plant them firmly in midair. They have to be rooted in something. And even the people that will deny that there is an objective truth or objective moral standard will appeal to it all the time in judging other people's behavior. You see it with atheists all the time too. You know, like some of the strongest moral language you'll hear comes from people like Richard Dawkins, who denies that there even is a moral dimension to reality. You know, he denies the existence of God. He says, we're all just dancing to the tune of our DNA. And then he says, how dare you do this?
Yeah.
It's like, right. Well... Where are you getting the moral obligation and values from after you just tossed the worldview out the window that would provide an ontological foundation for it in the first place?
Yep.
But when it comes to, you know, communicating truth to culture through humor, what's interesting is there has been an attack on comedy. And I think I used to think it was just, you know, humorless scolds who didn't like our jokes and had a problem with what we were saying because they were actually, you know, offended by them or something like that. And they're just humorless. But I think it actually goes deeper than that. This is where you get, you know, spiritual in the whole thing. There is an aversion to the truth itself, and that is really rearing its head in our culture. We are a post-truth, even anti-truth culture right now, and so when people are confronted with the truth, whether it's stated seriously or even in comedy, you know, the truth can be said in jest, and it's extremely offensive, and you have to shut down the person who made the joke. The joke that got us suspended from Twitter was we accurately referred to a male person as being a man. That man, Rachel Levine, Rachel Levine actually happens to identify as a woman.
Yeah.
But, you know, we said what was true rather than what you're supposed to say. And that's what got us in trouble. And so it's the humor's a vehicle for truth delivery. And that's why it's a threat in an anti-truth world that hates the truth and wants to stamp it out and assert these things as fact that are actually the opposite of fact. A man can become a woman. Men can get pregnant. Those types of ideas, there's no factual basis to them. And ultimately, I do think that is a futile way of thinking, because reality does smack you in the face at some point. You come to grips with reality very quickly when you actually have a situation like, oh, you know, this person needs an emergency surgery. Do we treat the patient as a man or a woman? Well, right. You know, if they're biologically male, you're going to have to treat them as a man, no matter what they said they were before they got to the hospital.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like you guys, is there any instances where you feel like you've gone too far, or you feel like you wish you hadn't done something or said something? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah. Well, so the tough thing with making jokes, you know, in engaging in mockery is that occasionally you can potentially do it in the wrong spirit. Your jokes can be misinterpreted at times. Sometimes you might make a joke too soon after somebody died or something like that. Yeah. It can be, you know, inappropriate and offensive. We've stepped in it a few times. I think the biggest controversies that we've had over the years have been people, you know, uncharitably misinterpreting what we're trying to say and suggesting that we were trying to make a point that we weren't making. That's often, like you could be criticizing a racist and doing it in a way where stupid people think you're actually being racist, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so, you know, comedy, especially satire, which has layers to it, there's a certain level of intelligence that's required in interpreting what's actually going on with the joke. And what is actually the joke? What is the punchline of the joke? Who is the joke really targeting here? You have to kind of think through that sometimes, and people often get that wrong. But It is possible to engage in the wrong spirit on things and just be, you know, mock somebody for the purpose of hurting them and putting them down. But our mission, what we're trying to do, like if I were to summarize like our mission into a single statement, which we don't really have a mission statement, but if I had to, I would say it's to ridicule bad ideas. Mm-hmm. And when you're ridiculing bad ideas, you're doing that for there's a moral purpose for doing that. You know what? C.S. Lewis said that good philosophy has to exist if for no other reason than because bad philosophy needs to be answered. And I think satire is necessary for exactly the same reason. It's an antidote to bad ideas. And bad ideas, when bad ideas are taken seriously rather than derided and cast aside, yeah, they end up having catastrophic effects in our culture. And next thing you know, you have teenage girls who are chopping off body parts and identifying as boys, yeah, and sterilizing themselves. Yeah. So bad ideas taken seriously have catastrophic consequences. So ridiculing them, I think, is a moral imperative of the Christian. It's a matter of, well, take it. Did you take it too far? Did you hurt somebody's feelings? Well, oftentimes people will put on this air of being offended. Oh, you know, those jokes are too offensive. You can't tell those jokes. They hurt people's feelings. Well, what if there's truth to it? And what if, mm-hmm, what if that truth could actually help people when it's recognized? You know, the feelings don't matter in that sense, especially when the feelings are being abused as a weapon. You know, people will pretend to be outraged in order to shut you up and stop you from talking because you're saying what's true. And so, yeah, there's a lot there to that whole conversation. I do think it's possible in some cases, of course, to go too far and to be hurtful on purpose and all, yeah, of that. But our motivation is to mock foolishness for what it is so that it isn't taken seriously.
Yeah. I mean, and that's supposed to be the function of free speech in its operational form, right? We have just come a long way from really having free speech. Free speech is supposed to let the best ideas come to the top and sort of and debate those other ones, as you pointed, bad ideas.
Yeah, well, the free speech principle is the best response to something that you don't like is to, if there's speech that you don't like, then the answer is more speech, you know, more refute speech. It, rebut, yeah, it, ridicule, yeah, it if you want to respond to it. Or you could just ignore it for whatever reason. I can guess at the reasons and tell you what I think the reasons are. But instead of having that healthier outlook where we invite a response or tolerate a response, there is a movement in our culture to prevent the response from,
yeah, right,
from being uttered. And so you're silencing people who challenge the prevailing narrative. And that's why it comes after comedians all very aggressively, because comedians are some of the most effective ones at challenging whatever the popular narrative is. And so you got to shut up the comedians. They're the ones who are making the tyrants look silly.
Right.
I was going to ask these movements, like, you know, since 2020, I think a lot of people have woken up to just how crazy and evil the world is. And if you haven't yet, I don't know where you've been, but people on our show, almost too awake. They send us links to thousands of things, and sometimes it's overwhelming what we receive on a daily basis. But when do you think things are demonic? When do you think there's demonic influence on some of the stories and the people and the leadership that when you're curating stories and you're trying to figure out what the heck's going on in our world?
Well, I think you could certainly say it of when you get into the spiritual warfare aspect of it, the anti-truth state of mind that we're talking about, even like these toxic ideas, you know, woke moral reasoning, which says that, you know, for the oppressed, everything is permitted. And so if you fall into an oppressed category, you can do anything and it's justified. And these oppressors who are at the top of the hierarchy in wokeness, they can do no right, and anything that's done against them is fine. All of these ideas which flip morality and deny the truth are, I think, part of the spiritual battle. You know, it's a lot of these things, and the reason I think I can say that with confidence is because it just simply isn't, it's very self-evidently the case that certain things are not true, and yet people are embracing those ideas anyway, and it's just pure evil, you know? Yeah. The effort, I think if you hate children and want them to suffer, you'll affirm them when they're wrong about who and what they are. You'll cultivate confusion in their minds and then affirm them when they've completely lost their sense of who they are. That's what you'll do if you hate them and want them to suffer. That's what you'd do if you were a demon trying to have the most diabolical impact on this world that you possibly could have. And look what we have going on in our culture. We're convincing, yeah, all these young children that they're born in the wrong bodies and that they need medications and surgeries to fix that problem. It was never a problem in the past. It's only a problem now.
Or we murder them in the womb.
Exactly. That's, yeah. If, yeah, they even, I mean, survive the womb, yeah, it's a, if they can make it into the world, but without being killed. We're going to cultivate confusion in them and then castrate and mutilate and sterilize them. And we're going to do it, and we're going to call it healthcare. We're going to call it care. You know, if Satan himself were to get a job somewhere in the world on this planet, he probably would do so in a Planned Parenthood clinic or a gender clinic. So I certainly think there are demonic influences at play in these ideologies, the radical ideologies, the dehumanizing that's happening there, and the euphemisms that are used to cover it all up and make it sound like it's good. Murder and mutilation are referred to as care in our culture. You can't get there without some underlying spiritual influence, just a darkness in people's souls and minds, clouding their judgment and making them view wrong as right.
It's like John 10, what I think of right away, right? Like the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And like that's the initiatives being pushed upon our society culturally. The vast majority is stealing, killing, and destroying of the things that you know that God has created and called good.
But it's like a twisted morality. Yeah. Like what you see is that it's like they all agree to this different alternate morality. I mean, they believe they are in the moral majority. They believe they're doing the moral thing. And what we see in scripture and historically is that scripture's twisted. There are two moralities kind of going head to head, and it doesn't feel like it's just a free for all. There's like a large group of people that seem to be agreeing on this alternate morality.
It's almost like a dogma. They've created their own sort of dogma. It's a religion. It is a religion.
It is.
I mean, it's a competing religion.
It's been described as a mind virus that spread. Well, why is the mind virus so effective, and why are people so susceptible to it? I don't know. Maybe read the Screwtape Letters and take that in. And
it's a great book.
And maybe you'll start to get an understanding of why exactly these ideas are not just planted, but flourish. I do, of course. Yeah, I believe that there are forces at work that are playing a role in that.
I think that's kind of what we do on our show, is give people answers to the paranormal and the strange things, you know, as aliens coming out in the news and people having, there was like that Miami incident and the Nevada, the Vegas incident, and people are just curious, like, are these entities showing up? Do you believe that the veil is thinning? Do you think that more paranormal stuff is happening around the globe? Or is it just, we have this technology now to communicate more? Or are we getting towards to some sort of end times? What do you think about that?
I don't know. I'd be interested in hearing what you think about that. I would guess that you probably think the answer is yes. I do think that the spiritual war has ramped up. I do think that the bad philosophies that Lewis was talking about that need to be countered by good philosophy are getting more traction and are spreading like wildfire. I think there's a lot of factors in that. I think social media has played a role in that, and in the advances in technology and communication and the social pressure that comes along with being connected to so many different people in that way. So there's a lot of practical and obvious answers to why some of these things are happening. But then I do think, obviously, that because of how things have escalated so much, you know, when I mentioned that Chesterton back in 1911 said the world's become too absurd to be satirized. What would he say if he was here right now and seeing the kinds of things that are going on? I mean, he would think that the spiritual war had just gone completely ballistic. Yeah. And he couldn't have even fathomed with the kinds of things that we're seeing right now in our culture and that are being accepted and tolerated. Imagine Chesterton at a Sam Smith concert or something, or one of these drag shows for kids in a public library. We're like in the water that's being brought to a boil and not noticing the temperature rising as easily. I think we become numb to it because we're steeped in it all the time. But you take somebody from a prior time and plant them today in our culture, and I think they would just be absolutely shocked by how depraved it is. And so, the spiritual sickness is it is a cancer, and it is killing the host. So does that mean that we're in the end times? I don't know. I'm sure people would have thought back when World War II was happening that we were certainly in the end times. The world felt like it was coming to an end. And then we had bright days on the backside of that. So I don't know when exactly, and no one knows exactly when the end is near. But it can certainly feel that way at times when things escalate to the extent that they have.
How do you feel like you've been spiritually attacked doing what you do? I know when you take on such a big project, a lot of times it's a battle in your life, in your head, and between people. Everyone's trying to sabotage. It could get crazy.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of criticism that comes that's very open and out on the surface, where people are explicitly, you know, attacking you. As far as behind the scenes spiritual attacks, you know, those are harder to detect. It's harder to know exactly where those are coming from or when they're happening or what they are. But I mean, that can be everything. I referenced this Screwtape Letters earlier, and that kind of stuff can be so subtle. It can be as simple as, you know, you getting easily distracted during your prayers or church service so that you're not focusing on what you should be focusing on. It can be very subtle little things that draw your attention away from what should be your priority. And you can be sitting in a blind spot where you don't realize that it's a spiritual influence. So I don't know, but I'm certain that there are attacks. You know, whenever you're trying to take a stand for the truth and what's right, you're going to have forces at work trying to prevent your voice from being heard. And then trying to also get you to trip up so that you look like a fool, so that you know, have moral failures, or, you know, contradict yourself, and your double standards are what people look at instead of what you're actually saying, and so they can discredit you. And so, you know, I try to be very vigilant with making sure that I'm not falling victim to things that would draw me off course and undermine the message.
Yeah.
That, and my question was almost right in that vein. Like, what's it like? You start a comedy site and a satire site, and you fast forward it, and now you've got some of the most powerful people and institutions in our country that are trying to shut you down or silence you, at least. What's that like on a personal level to kind of be along for that ride, and to have that sort of going on in the peripheral, right?
Well, it's on the one hand, you know, it's kind of like discouraging that you're being attacked on all sides, but I do find it motivational, actually, that, you know, like, I remember when the New York Times accused us of being a misinformation site that traffics in misinformation under the guise of satire. I remember thinking to myself, I'd much rather have the New York Times smearing me because they hate me than praising me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the attacks in some ways are a good thing, because it does signal that you're doing something right, or why else would they be attacking you? And so it can be encouraging when there's flack, you're over the target. So
100%.
That is one thing. The other thing that I draw encouragement from is the fact that the attacks often result in, especially when it comes to, you know, censorship and suppression, those things tend to backfire. And it depends on your circumstances. But in our circumstances, we had enough of a following and a platform. We even had Elon Musk in our followings, so that when there was an effort to suppress our voice was actually amplified. And it's this Streisand effect thing, if you're familiar with that term, where, you know, trying to stamp something out draws more attention to it and makes it more popular. And it should have just been left alone if you didn't want it to become so popular. So we've benefited greatly from the Streisand effect too. So I'm not mad about it. You know, I do think that it's a bad thing that you have the government, the media, and all the most powerful institutions ideologically in lockstep with each other and working with each other to stamp out dissent, and doing it in some really underhanded ways. And in our case, like with the Twitter situation, you know, we were suspended for hateful conduct underneath the misgendering policy of their terms of service. And so you had a speech platform. Twitter was a speech platform that described itself in its mission statement as a platform for free expression without barriers. A platform for free expression without barriers. And then they take radical gender ideology. Am I blurry right now? I look blurry.
Yeah, it's right on brand.
It's on brand.
Yeah, it is on brand, isn't it? Yeah, very. I'm out of focus. Apologies.
You're very blurry.
I don't have anyone to come right and there. Fix my focus. But
you're a blurry creature right now.
I am a blurry creature. It's perfect.
Yeah.
You should do that on everybody. Put a filter on them.
You're like, dude, no, this doesn't work. It's the Mitch Hedberg joke, man. That's where our name comes from.
Maybe you guys are doing that.
Yeah,
but,
we are.
But anyway, what I was saying is the ideology, they've baked their radical ideology into their terms of service so that it breaking ranks with them and defying and having different ideology, different views and values becomes an enforceable policy violation on a platform for free expression.
Right.
So they abuse the power that they have to try to control you and keep you within, you know, you got to play by our rules. You know, you got to admit that you engaged in hateful conduct and never do that again. And so it is problematic that we have all of those institutions working together, and everything that we can do to chip away at that and take that power back, I think is vitally important. And man, Elon Musk being willing to spend $44 billion to play a role on that whole thing was pretty awesome.
Pretty amazing. I think that, I think a lot of people, love to give him, a lot of Christians don't know what to think about Elon. And I think that it's interesting to kind of watch his mindset as he rolls. And I think that what you're saying is important to us because we just did a deal with the Duck Dynasty guys because they have a similar view. We were waiting for a long time to figure out how are we going to take this podcast, who we want to take it with. And those guys are all about free speech and creating a community. And I think Christians more than ever need to kind of circle the wagons and try to protect what we do have.
Yeah.
I think we have to get a little bit more on the offense, you know. So one of my last questions is like, what do you see in the future? Where do you think this is going? Do you think things are going to get better? Or do you think it's just going to get...
Do I think we're going to find Bigfoot out there and
Well, that would be better. That's on the better side there, Seth. Yeah.
I know you got to go, but
I do, in a second, but let me answer that question. Okay. Am I hopeful about where things are going or where do I expect things to be going? Yeah. I am. So I've become more cynical as I've gotten older. I've lost a lot of faith in people, but I remain hopeful just in the sense that I know because of my Christianity, because of my Christian worldview and the way that I believe that, that God has a plan. And that we are actually human beings made in God's image, and that we have baked into us an understanding of what is true and good and beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think that humanity will always, having been made in God's image, hunger for that. And the hunger will only increase for that the more we're deprived of it. And I think there's a beautiful illustration of that in the end of That Hideous Strength by Lewis. And I can't recap the whole thing, but there's the main character in that book is basically being brainwashed to try to get him to accept, you know, the grotesque and the distorted and the disgusting as being normal and fine and good. And he, you know, he rejects that. He's being deprived of he's even being shown imagery, like it's a brainwashing thing that's being done to him. He's being shown all this grotesque imagery and these bizarre ideas, and they're trying to get him to accept this as normal. And the more they did that, actually, the more they drew him back to. He kept coming back to the fact that, you know, goodness and beauty are real things. And they actually, it was like a man in the desert craves water. He craved normalcy and what was good and what was beautiful. And so, you know, he didn't allow them to destroy his mind, and he fled. And so maybe the more we are deprived of the truth, and maybe the more depraved our culture becomes, people will start to wake up. I do know, and it's been described a couple ways, you know, Elon said it's waking up from woke. We're seeing a lot of people waking up from woke. I think that there are kind of pivotal moments where people start to snap out of it and they see, wait a minute, this is actually really, really disgusting and depraved. I think October 7th was one of those moments where people realized that after October 7th happened and you had all these innocent people who were being slaughtered by literal terrorists, and there were so many people on the left praising the terrorists for doing something good because they were oppressed. The terrorists were oppressed and they were attacking the oppressor. And that was a good thing. And so it was okay that they were slaughtering children and raping women and leaving all these dead bodies in the streets. And they were cheering that on. And I think, and that was what I referred to earlier as woke moral reasoning. It's the idea that for the oppressed, all things are permitted. Hamas is oppressed. Therefore, for Hamas, all things are permitted. It puts you on the side of terrorists, literal terrorists, to adopt that moral framework. Mm. And I think there were a lot of people who saw that happening. They saw that playing out, and it awakened them from wokeness. They saw that this is actually a really twisted and depraved system that doesn't work, and it inverts morality. It values the wrong things. And so, I don't know. I am hopeful that people being deprived of what they will see these egregious examples, they will see this depravity and the goodness that's still in them, that God planted in them when he made them in his image, yeah. Will reawaken in their spirit a desire for the good, the true, and the beautiful. And we can only hope that that's the case.
I think that's a good word, because I think a lot of times people get really paranoid on our channels and they just want to, like, you know, just get off the grid, live in the middle of nowhere and do nothing.
Yeah.
But the story is that, you know, God has always had people in Babylon doing what he needed to get done. Is that God is not afraid of the system. He's not afraid of the, you know, the governments. It's like he raises up who he needs in the middle of that Babylonian system, and we're supposed to and almost endure. And he provides ways, and he, for some reason, we need a little bit of a struggle to do anything as humans.
Right.
Like, everything's easy all the time. We don't do anything, and it's cool that you guys are out there. You guys are definitely bigger than the Onion now. Did you ever think that was going to happen?
No, who did? Who did? You know, it's...
Wow.
Everything has its lifespan. Eventually something will come up that's more popular than us, but it is wild. They let a Christian satire site become the predominant satire site in the world.
Dude, doing the Lord's work, man. Yeah. Just keep, Seth, thanks so much, man. Thanks to, and thanks to Mike Donahue.
Yeah.
Mike, for setting this up. And man, I love that you're well read too. I love the Lewis stuff. Like, a big fan of Lewis. And there's so much wisdom in that. I think in some ways, you talk about Chesterton as well. I think that some of those brilliant men would be.
Yeah, I tap into those guys for insights. They're smarter than I am. Metaphysical geniuses. Yeah.
I think they knew things that also that we, they knew some blurry stuff, you know, they had their novels, the way they wrote their creativity. They were tapped into some ancient stuff that I think that we try to get into and on our show, that maybe some of those creatures they were writing about as, you know, in their books were true and roamed the earth at one point.
Well, I'm glad I could stay on brand for you guys and be as blurry as possible. Well,
that's
for
amazing.
This.
Actually. Yeah.
That was really, apt.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Seth.
Where can your listeners get involved? And in, like, besides just following you guys on social media, what's some things you guys are doing that you could point people to?
Well, social media is great. We do have a subscription plan for people who want to be supporters of us. You know, fighting big tech is you never know when you're going to be completely booted. So our subscribers keep us going and allow us to market and do new things, like work on video content and publish books and all of that stuff. So
yeah,
there's a lot of ways to subscribe, support us, follow us. BabylonBee.com. A great place to start, and anyone on social media.
Let's go.
Thanks for your time, Seth.
Thank you guys.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Great to meet you.
All right,
thanks
you too.
So much.